listening to Alan James on Circle of White Light Radio and People's Internet Radio, focusing on solutions and thinking different.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Circle of White Light Radio with myself, Alan James. It's the 18th of April, 2021, and we got out of kind of lockdown 5 jail. From April 12th, as you know, things were freed up a little bit. We could travel around our counties rather than the 5K limit. Not that I kind of was bothered with it anyway. I just drove when I wanted to drive somewhere. I wasn't really interested in, sticking to any limits. You know, you have to do what you have to do, as you know. So a little bit of freedom, and I hope everybody's enjoying it. And I think this is kind of April, May. I think they're looking to open up a bit more, but we'll see what happens anyway. Right, my guest on the show we have on in a few minutes is Dr. Graham Munro Hall. Dr. Graham is a retired dentist, and his wife is a dentist also retired. And Dr. Graham wrote the book Toxic Dentistry Exposed, which we'll be talking to him about shortly. But before we do that, let's find out what the communication channels are.
The communication channels are email. Contact us at circleofwhitelight.com, by phone 046-927-1212, or sign up to our newsletter via our website at circleofwhitelight.com.
Okay, as usual, you know, it's circleofwhitelight.com, the website. PayPal button is on there as well for donations, and patreon.com/COWL. Or I'll give you an update on the musical instruments in a few minutes. So let's crack on, and let's get on with the couple of stories that I have here. In the independent.ie, US calls for pause on Johnson & Johnson single dose vaccine after 6 clotting cases. Federal health agencies seek pause on vaccine use as an abundance of caution. Adverse events appear to be extremely rare, says officials as they begin investigation. The US Food and Drug Administration, FDA, are calling for an immediate pause of the Johnson & Johnson single-dose vaccine after 6 recipients developed a rare disorder post-vaccination. The FDA described the recommended pause as a decision out of an abundance of caution and said the cases were extremely rare. They wrote in a statement online, as of 4/12, 6.8 million plus doses of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine have been administered in the US. CDC and FDA are reviewing data involving 6 reported US cases of a rare and severe type of blood clot in individuals after receiving the vaccine. Right now, these adverse events appear to be extremely rare. Well, the latest news on that, as far as I know, and correct me if I'm wrong, hello to everybody in the chat room logging in there. Correct me if I'm wrong, is that the Johnson & Johnson has been pulled in Europe, along with the AstraZeneca. So the only two that's left is the Pfizer and the Moderna. And we'll just have to see what happens with them. Okay, the other news is on a website called breakingnews.ie. And it says here, High Court suspends GP who described COVID-19 as a hoax. The president of the High Court has ruled that a general practitioner who has allegedly told a patient that the COVID-19 pandemic is a hoax should be temporarily suspended from practicing medicine. Why? That's his opinion. Surely he's allowed to have an opinion. It mightn't be going with the flow of the narrative of him as a doctor, but surely he's allowed to have an opinion. In a recently published judgment, Mrs. Justice Mary Irvin said she was granting order suspending the practice certificate of Dr. Gerard Waters pending the outcome of any full disciplinary proceedings into allegations against him. Now, I mentioned Dr. Waters before. He's down in Selbridge, County Kildare, and fair play to him for saying that he's not going to give out the vaccine. Dr. Waters, who is aged in his early 70s, is based in Selbridge, County Kildare. The application seeking Dr. Waters' suspension was heard by the President before Easter in private. The court's decision has been made available to the public. In her judgment, Mrs. Justice Irvine said the medical council received a complaint about the GP from a patient who attended at his surgery in September 2020 with a suspected chest infection who was concerned they may have COVID-19. It is also alleged that Dr. Waters told the patient that the government were scamming the people and that wearing masks was causing illness and that people who had died from the illness had not actually died from the virus. The patient also claims that Dr. Waters told him that his own symptoms were caused by the mask the patient was wearing, the judge said. So after thinking long and hard about the situation and the patient decided to make a complaint due to his belief that what the doctor said was dangerous and undermining messages given by public health professionals trying to manage the current global public health emergency. Opposing the application to suspend him, Dr. Waters argued that the convictions he holds regarding COVID-19 were protected by his right to conscientious objection. Of course, he's allowed to have an opinion. He denied putting his patients at risk, Mrs. Justice Irvine added. He also argued that there was significant scepticism in the public and medical professional about vaccines and that his actions did not amount to an attempt to undermine public health. Of course not. If he's concerned as a medical doctor and as a doctor, if you're concerned about something, surely you have a right to say it. You can't just say, shut up and do what you're told. You can't do that. They have an obligation. Isn't it? Don't they have a Hippocratic oath being a doctor? You know, do not harm anyone. So that's very important that they do speak out. And unfortunately, the doctors that seem to be speaking out are seem to be getting attacked for it, you know, for saying speaking out, which is ridiculous. It's just madness. Okay, just a couple of things that happened during the week. As regular listeners know, we donated €1,000 of musical equipment to St. Oliver's School in Oldcastle. The delivery came in during the week, so we brought them over and took a few photos to show the people who donate where their donation is going. The music teacher is over the moon with the donation, so thank you to everyone who donates to Circle of White Light Radio and the Pay It Forward appeal. I'd also like to thank the PIF team, who are also doing a great job. So the instruments went over. She said it was like Christmas. And the following day, it just happened to be her 50th birthday. So it was a bit like a birthday and Christmas all together. And we opened up all the instruments and she checked them all and everything else. And she was delighted. And she just said, this is going to help the kids to have a choice of instruments they want to play, and what they can put together is going to be phenomenal. You know, so she just can't thank us enough for doing that. So thanks to you guys for donating. You know, it's not me. It's you guys who donate towards Circle of White Light and PIF. So thank you again for that donation. Now, also, I'm going to be on. Now, it's very rare for me to do interviews. As you know, I do loads of interviews. But Patricia Corey, who has been on Circle of White Light and also OIM, she does her show as well. And it's called Beyond the Matrix. So Patricia is interviewing me on Saturday. It's a pre-record. So it won't be a live show, but she's going to pre-record and then put it up on her page. And that's at 2 o'clock. So, yeah, I'm going to be on camera. So I have to make sure I'm all kind of booted and suited. That look okay. That's the great thing with audio. You could be naked here behind the microphone and nobody would know. You wouldn't know anything. But when you do video interviews, you have to be kind of look half decent, you know. So I'll do my comb over and everything else. So, so that should be up probably by Saturday evening, I think. And we'll talk about everything and anything. I think the interview is about 90 minutes. So I'll send people a link when that interview is done. Okay, I'm going to bring my guest on. My guest is Dr. Graham Monroe Hall. And Dr. Graham and his wife retired in 2017 and sold their practice. He became more involved with World Alliance for Mercury Free Dentistry as their chief dental officer. He is involved in the Minamata Convention, UNEP, negotiations to eliminate the use of mercury in the world. He has written some papers for them, which are on the convention's website. You may find that the listeners may find interesting. He gives talks to dentists, doctors, public, and obviously does radio shows as well, on dental mercury, fluoride, vitamin C, infusions for health, tomography, and NICO's jawbone infections, NICO's. Good evening, Dr. Graham. How are you doing?
Thank you, Alan. Good evening. I'm doing very well.
Brilliant stuff. Thank you for coming on. The last time that I interviewed you was with Steve on Open Your Mind Radio, and since then, obviously, you've retired, you've sold up, and but you know, you can see what's going on. And tonight, we're going to be talking about dentistry, but also we're going to be talking about COVID, because I know that you have a viewpoint on the COVID situation as well and what's going on, and you're currently in the UK, so you're seeing what's going on from that side. So, you sold up and you finished your practice in 2017. Was that purely just a retirement thing, or did you have enough, or what happened there?
It was a mixture. I had thought I'd keep going. I'd reached the age of 70 then. And I was, obviously, when you stick your head above the parapet, you get shot at. And I've been shot at constantly. And I had the GDC had been constantly trying to remove my license. They had five major goes and failed each time. And the indemnity insurance decided that I was costing them too much money for them defending me against the General Dental Council. So they cancelled my indemnity insurance. And since you have to have that to practice, that was the end of me, really.
So this seems to be a common thing, Dr. Graham, because you've just heard that I read an article regarding a medical doctor over here in Ireland called Dr. Waters, and he refuses to give the vaccine to his patients, and obviously he doesn't trust the vaccine at all. He's obviously concerned about it, and they actually struck him off as a doctor, and now he's obviously in court. He's going to be fighting to regain his license. And this seems to be the common agenda with the system, that if you don't play ball and agree with their narrative, that you will be attacked or struck off, or you lose your license, whatever. Now, surely, as a human being, you're entitled to an opinion. And, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, just because you signed up as a dentist doesn't mean you have to agree with everything the regulator says.
No, I mean, there should be, as they used to say, a broad church. I mean, you must have difference of opinion. If you don't have difference of opinion, there's going to be no progress. There's going to be no advancement. Things are just going to stay exactly as they are. So we have to have these differences of opinion. You shouldn't put the patient at risk, obviously. But if you can justify what you're doing, then I think that's reasonable. One of the things that I was pulled at was what they call, what they said, if the standards of care. In other words, if a patient went to 100 dentists and 99 of them said mercury's all right, but I was the one who said mercury wasn't all right, and I could show the scientific proof that it wasn't okay, because the others were doing more of them than was of me, they were the standards of care. Therefore, I was guilty of breaching the standards of care, irrespective if I was right or wrong. Which, to my mind, is utterly ludicrous. So, you know, we just carried on doing what was scientifically correct and was best for our patients.
But surely you have to go and look at the science. You know, it's not a case of just because 90 people agree with it means they're right. You have to go and look at the science. And if the science says that you're right, well, surely they have to turn around and go, well, fair enough.
Yeah, you would think that that is the case, but it's not. They always, I think Carl Sagan said that science doesn't advance by things being published. It only advances when the old guard die off. And I think that's correct. So we're still fighting. You know, it's 100 years now in this mercury war. We're still fighting to not have mercury stuck in people's teeth, you know, constantly being emitted from their mouth and fillings and going into their brain and affecting them and affecting their children. When the facts have been known for many, many years, why are we still fighting for this? It's a nonsense. But they will, and we are still fighting. We're fighting with the British Dental Association, the American Dental Association, the World Dental Federation. You know, we go to these meetings as little guys, and we're against all these people, you know, and we just sit down, and in fact, we are winning the fight now. We are the little guys. We have punched above our weight with this, and we are winning the fight.
Well, that's good. What are they? Because amalgams and mercury implants or fillings are not good, and basically, as you said, they shouldn't have done them. What is the solution today? What do dentists do when they're faced with the same problem? Are they still putting mercury in, or is there an alternative for that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the alternative, in 2009, the Swedish Chemical Agency, a branch of their government, came out and said that the alternatives to amalgam were available, affordable, and effective. And that was over 10 years ago. And since that time, the alternatives have advanced and become significantly cheaper. So, in fact, there's no cost disadvantage between amalgam and composite anymore. You know, from a materials point of view, they cost the same. It really comes down to the what's between the ears of the dentist, whether or not they believe in it or actually used to it. I think it comes down to the age of the dentist. The newer dentists haven't really been trained in the use of amalgam, so they tend not to use it, even though most of them still believe it's safe. Whereas the older group have been happily using it for a number of years, and they haven't, in their own words, we haven't seen a problem with it, but then they haven't seen it because they haven't looked and they're not trained to look for problems with it. And of course, I mean, one of the greatest effects of exposure to mercury is, in fact, it's very neurotoxic. So you do have loss of intelligence, loss of motor function, loss of concentration. You know, people become bad-tempered, all of which describes elderly dentists, you see. So they're not in a position to actually judge this. They're affected by mercury themselves.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because I picked up on what you said regarding elderly dentists. So does that mean that if people are going to attend a dentist and they're of a certain age, they should be concerned, or at least be aware that they could possibly not be telling them the newest solution for the problem? And if it is an amalgam or something's needed, that if they turn around and suggest that, oh, I need to put mercury in for that, they need to speak up and go, no, we're not doing that.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably more tendency towards the elderly than the newer dentists, but even some of the newer dentists are quite pro-amalgam. But there is no reason to use mercury in dentistry at all anymore. I mean, I haven't used it for, you know, 35 plus years. And 35 years ago, it was a lot harder to use the alternatives than it is now. There is no need for it. So it's really up to the patient to ask. If the dentist says, I have to use mercury in order to fill that tooth, then just get out of the chair and walk, because there is no clinical situation where mercury has to be used. What he's really saying is, I am not competent to use the alternatives in this situation. And so why should anyone go to an incompetent dentist?
Well, I hate to kind of point out another kind of issue, but could this be in relation to pricing and costs? I mean, is it going to be more expensive as well to have the mercury in than have the alternative treatment?
Ah, well, the economics of it are very interesting. If we go down, say, to the economics to the patient, traditionally the alternatives, which is usually composite for adults, has been significantly more expensive than amalgam, and the dentists do charge more. There's no particular reason why they should do it other than the fact that they've got away with it over the years. It takes the same length of time to place a composite filling as it does an amalgam filling. The cost of the material is the same. In fact, it's slightly cheaper now overall, and it doesn't cost the environment anything. So on a micro level, to the patient and to the dentist, there shouldn't be any economic justification for using mercury. But on a gross scale, the fact that mercury is released into the environment, each gram of mercury is released into the environment, does cause an economic impact. And needs cleanup. So it's reckoned that a gram of mercury released into the environment costs a minimum of $60 overall in economic lost economic activity. The EU did a report called the Concord Report, the true cost of dental amalgam, where all that was spelled out very accurately in scientific terms.
Right, okay, that's interesting. Now, I can guess now that we're going to get a lot of questions on the chat, which is great. So bring, you know, put your questions in, folks. If you have a question, just make sure you put Q or question at the start so we can see it. Because, you know, if you have any dental issues and questions, by all means, ask. Now's the time. Now, Graham, I told you before we went live there, I haven't obviously been to a dentist for 10 years because I had a bad experience with a female dentist. And basically, you know, she was a kind of bit rough with the needles and, you know, with the drill, I thought she was drilling for oil. And it just put me completely right off. But I had to bite the bullet because I know I have some work to be done. So I did pay a visit to a dentist there a couple of weeks ago and he did a complete check on my teeth and he said, yeah, you're going to need this, you know, you're going to need a 3 crowns. And but first of all, what they'll do is they'll first do a clean, a standard, and then they'll get in and do the crowns. Is there anything that I need to be aware of? Or if I go back in and see the dentist, because he might listen to this show as well. You never know. He might turn around and go, I'll have a listen to the show because Dr. Graham was on. Is there anything that I need to say to the dentist before I go in now to, after I get my cleaning done, when he's doing the crowns, that anything that I need to tell him or ask him? He seems very open-minded. I'll give him credit for that. We had a good chat last time when I went in, the first time I met him. So is there anything I should be asking?
Yes, just ask him what material he's going to use to make the crowns, because you don't want metal in your mouth at all. I mean, a good friend of mine, Professor Steiskar, a Swedish immunologist, she said metal spare parts are only fit for robots, and she was quite right. So you don't want a crown that's metal, because it's what we call a metal ceramic crowns, where it looks like it's ceramic crown, but it's metal underneath. You really want to avoid those and have either pure ceramic or one of the other, maybe these CAD-CAM materials can be used now for crowns. But certainly everything should be metal-free, because you don't want any new metal going into the mouth, because if you've already got metal, then you're going to have a reaction between the two.
Yeah, I did ask him. I do have a couple of amalgams, and I did ask him about that. And he said, look, we're doing it in phases, and the last phase will be to consider about the amalgams. And he said to me that, he said, well, look, you know, if they're not causing any problems, then it's probably best not to do anything. You know, don't rattle the cage if they're not causing any problems. But he said, we can talk about it when we get to that time.
Yeah, I have sympathy with that point of view. I mean, if you're fitting well and you have no particular issues, I mean, that point of view can be justified. What we did, we always got rid of all the metals first before we did anything. Before we did anything restoratively, we went actually down to a clean base, because the mere fact that you might be okay now doesn't mean you might be okay later on. And if he's going to do a metal bonded crown, for example, and you still have amalgams in your mouth, mercury from your fillings will attach to the metal in that crown, and you will never be mercury free. So I can see his point of view. You know, if you're fitting well and the things are okay, then it could be considered a good point of view. However, and there's a caveat here, is that they're still exposing you. These fillings you've got are still exposing you to mercury every time you brush your teeth, every time you have a hot cup of tea. The mercury vapor leaves these fillings, and 20 seconds after you inhale it, it's stuck within your brain. It's stuck there for years, so you don't know what future health problems may come. Now, you may not have any, and I hope you don't, any future problems from your exposure to mercury, but why risk it? So we would say, purely from a personal point of view, I would get rid of them.
Right, okay. I mean, I don't know what the cost would be. That's the thing. The cost has to be a factor in this, and what's affordable. That's the thing as well.
Well, it obviously depends on the size of the size of the filling. But it says that these things can be done in stages.
Okay, what's the procedure? So just give us some information on this, because I'm quite interested to hear what is the procedure that if somebody has an amalgam, what would you do? What is the procedure to get rid of them? Because I've heard different stories. Some people go in and, you know, I've seen dentists having hazmat suits on and they just walk away in the amalgam. And then I had a lady on who's a nutritionist, Bernadette Bowen. She flew over to Switzerland and she said that it was like an operating theatre when they were getting rid of them. So there seems to be different degrees of how people get rid of them and what's required.
That's very true. I mean, traditionally, and shall we say, the usual dentistry just drills them out and doesn't bother. And then the mercury, of course, goes all over the operator, the girl he's working with, all over the floor, and it's in a mercury-contaminated environment. So every patient going into that will also pick up the mercury from previous patients in that environment. But every time a mercury filling is taken out, then mercury is released and you, the patient, will be the recipient of that mercury. So there are what we call mercury hygiene steps to get rid of this. And what I would recommend is that you should ask the dentist what steps does he take. When I was in practice, because of the type of practice it was when we were dealing with the very sick, we did take extreme measures with mercury. We used intravenous vitamin C. In fact, we wouldn't take mercury out of a patient unless they were wired up to an infusion of a high dose of intravenous vitamin C. And then you should be have a there are sort of what we would regard as minimum things that you can do. Maybe that's too extreme, and it probably is for a general dentist. But certainly as a patient, you should be breathing oxygen or air from a separate supply, so the vapor that comes off the fillings as they're being drilled out, you don't breathe it in. That's a minimum. You should be properly gowned up. The teeth should be isolated either with the rubber dam or what's called the cleanup tip, so the mercury sludge as it's being drilled out the filling doesn't touch the gum and the mercury is being absorbed in there. Various little factors like this. You should just ask them, what are they doing? What are they doing? And there's an organization called the International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology where dentists can go and actually learn how to have the proper mercury hygiene. And if they pass a small test with them, then they're called SMART operators, S-M-A-R-T, which means they are, well, whether they do it or not, but they have a minimum of equipment to reduce your exposure to mercury, and they know what they're doing. So just ask the dentist, what does he do to minimize the exposure to mercury?
Okay. It's a consideration because I'll be going, when I have the crowns done and everything else, the last phase three of that will be to discuss the amalgams and what way forward, and obviously the cost involved as well. So we're going to have to see what happens. It was something that when I was a kid, I got them in. And again, as you said, the dentist at the time just did it. There was no kind of replacement.
That's true. When I joined the health service, you know, in 1971, you know, my mother, the only person I've ever worked for, because I'm a lousy employee, could have all my own ideas. He said, I want you to do 40 amalgam fillings a day per patient. And that's what we were told to do, 40 amalgam fillings a day.
Wow.
I mean, That's
incredible. And how does this, I know you retired in 2017, and obviously we're in this situation with COVID and everything else now, and you're seeing what's going on. How does that tie in to dentistry and what you're seeing from your perspective now?
I think the whole COVID situation has been handled by the authorities appallingly. You know, it's been unscientific. The cost of their policies for society in the future is going to be absolutely enormous. I mean, we know we're being lied to. You know, over here, certainly, we know that the government and their advisors, that we, the public, are being lied to. I mean, Boris said just the other day that lockdowns work. Well, you know, but that's demonstrably false. We know they don't work. We know that Witte and Valance, the scientific advisors, they showed the House of Commons graphs, which they knew to be false. In other words, they even lied to the House of Commons. They knew those to be wrong. I mean, I've been in touch with what's called the Therapeutic Task Force over here, which the government set up to, is there a cure for this? And we showed them, demonstrated the science, you know, that this thing, at the very beginning of this so-called pandemic, was in fact curable. And you can use intravenous vitamin C, which is what we did as a standard practice. And it's what they've done in China. It's what they've done in a few American clinics. You know, with enormous success, people just don't die if you have intravenous vitamin C. And there's other things I can think of, just off the top of my head, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different cures for COVID the government have been informed about. We've given them the science about, and they just ignore it. And why they ignore it, I'm not so sure. I don't know what their agenda is, but it's certainly not for our welfare.
Well, the agenda is to vaccinate everybody, because we know that the vaccines are mRNA, and it's an experimental gene therapy drug. And this has been confirmed. Multiple doctors have come out and said it. Why are they pushing this experimental drug? This experiment is supposed to be going on till 2023. And basically, it's going to fundamentally change our DNA if you get it. And they want to be able to roll out the vaccine passports. And basically, because the nanotech that's in the vaccine is apparently a way that they can manipulate certain things in their body. And I know that sounds like very Terminator, the movie kind of information, but this is what they're planning. This is what they want to do, and this is why the push is on with the vaccines, because it's not in the legal definition in the law, and this is my understanding, it does not match a vaccine. And if you go and check your insurance documents and you ask them if you have life insurance, do you cover the life insurance if I get the vaccine? A lot of companies are saying now, no, we don't cover it, because that's not a vaccine. It's experimental drug.
Yeah, absolutely right. It's definitely not a vaccine. And of course, when this first came out, my wife looking at this, and she said the thing that everyone should really be alarmed about, once you've got this vaccine into you, there's no off switch. There's no off switch. It's permanent there for the rest of your life. Whatever it's going to do, it's going to do. You cannot get out of it. There's no off switch.
Yeah.
So there's no second case, which is not, as you say, it's not a normal vaccine. It is definitely not a vaccine. It is gene therapy. I mean, the AstraZeneca one actually penetrates the nucleus of the cell. I mean, the mRNA ones go and alter the mitochondria and instruct them what to do. But the long-term consequences of this, we don't know. It could be that there are no long-term consequences, which I think highly unlikely. So we're seeing the short-term ones now, you know, the deaths with the blood clot. We're seeing the increase of COVID from people who've had the jab. And, of course, we're not even getting the figures. How do we know the figures? Because we have a friend of ours who's in her 80s. I mean, she was talked into having one of them, and she's got the shakes now and neurologically compromised, you know, high blood pressure and things. So she goes to it and she says to the doctor, you know, since I've had this a month ago, you know, and I've been in hospital 3 times now, and they say there's nothing wrong with me, and I've got this massively high blood pressure, I can't stop shaking. What is it? And they say, oh, it could be your thyroid. They're denying it's the vaccine. So we've no idea what the true damage is out there, but it will come apparent as time unfolds.
It will come out. And at this moment in time, I have a load of questions that's come in, Dr. Graham, but I'm going to play the NHS whistleblower for people who haven't heard this. Brian and Mike from UK Column interviewed a woman who was an NHS whistleblower. And she basically exposed what was going on in the NHS. And the NHS is the governing body, the health service over in the UK. We have one over here in Ireland, which is called the HSC. And this lady basically just exposed what was going on. And I want you to have a listen to this. And then after this, we'll have a chat with Dr. Graham. And it is frightening, but it's only about, you know, a few minutes, but it's worthwhile having a listen to. We'll have a listen to this, and we'll catch you on the far side.
Good afternoon. It's Wednesday, the 14th of April, 2021, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. Your host today, Mike Robinson, myself, Brian Gerrish. And we're hoping we're going to be joined by Alex Thompson, bringing us Eastern Approaches from the Netherlands. Now, over the years, UK Column has from time to time opened the news stating that we believe we have critical information to bring to the public in the United Kingdom. Today is one of those days, and we're going to open with the extraordinary testimony of an NHS England whistleblower speaking about what is really happening around the government's vaccination programme. We invite all of our listeners to listen extremely carefully to every single word this extremely brave lady says.
Dear Brian, as you can see from a photo of my NHS ID, I have to verify that I work for the NHS. Can I please ask that you and UK Column not reveal my identity, my job title, or the health board that I work for? And as I am a senior nurse, it is appropriate to refer to me as such. But I really cannot afford for my health board to be revealed, as it would take no time for me to be identified, and I have already been threatened with losing my job. I report directly to the line manager, who sits at executive level within my board, and my card is already marked. I am directly involved with the vaccination programme for my health board at senior nursing management level. I'm essentially a policy writer, and I'm responsible for the prescribing documents that allow healthcare staff to administer the jabs. They are not vaccines, and as such, I can't refer to them as this. I have been in my current post directly responsible for all our vaccine policies and prescribing documents for years. I work in tandem with our public health team, and I know a great deal in regard to vaccines and their use. I have also worked previously as a research nurse, and I know how to critically appraise journal articles and trial protocols. I am contacting you at UK Column in response to the video No Smoke Without Fire Part 2, in particular concerning a question you put to Debbie Evans. You asked Debbie what she believed was going on in regard to medics, nurses and carers who were involved in the vaccine programme and whether or not they had knowledge of the risks around the jabs, but were carrying on regardless, or were they not aware as a result of how they are trained nowadays? I would agree with part of Debbie's response in so much as everyone involved in the job programme is simply listening to senior management, and there is very little, if any, questioning around the whole issue of the jabs. I started to ask questions in regard to the safety of the jabs before the MHRA gave their emergency use authorisation last year. I knew I would be expected to be directly involved in the rollout of the jabs in our health board, and I had been reading the trial protocols and their interim analysis data where published. I could see very early on that there were flaws in the design of the Pfizer trial, and for all the jabs, there was little to no safety data made available. I could see that the claims of the pharmaceutical companies as to the efficacy of the jabs was poetic license, and as far as I'm concerned, was designed to mislead. Because my work has centred on vaccines for the last few years, I also questioned the speed with which these jabs came into use, and the fact that no one was questioning the outcomes of the numerous animal trials that had been undertaken over the previous 18 years for SARS and MERS. Initially, I refused to have any involvement and undertake my usual tasks in relation to these new jabs. However, I was quickly threatened with redeployment to the planned vaccine centre, where I would be expected to administer the jabs. I definitely did not want to be in a position where I was expected to inject anyone. So I reined in my objection, but continued to refuse to have my name appear on any of the paperwork. At every turn, I have challenged and questioned the need for these jabs in any cohort other than the plus 65 years and the clinically at risk. Even then, I questioned the lack of safety and efficacy data. I challenged the fact that our health board had adopted a policy of not providing the patient information leaflet, PIL, to all jab recipients. The PIL should always be made available to every recipient in a timely manner. so that they may read through it in order to make a truly informed decision and provide consent to receiving the jab. Yet it became policy that no one was to offer this to recipients unless they had requested it. However, lay people have no concept of the PIL and are unaware that this is supposed to be provided to them. Conversely, however, it is written in the protocols that the healthcare professionals must use to authorise them to administer the jab, that the PIL must be made available to the recipient. Similarly, I challenge the fact that the documentation used by the healthcare professionals as a checklist to be gone through with every recipient did not include that the recipient must be informed that they are taking part in an ongoing clinical trial. At every turn and where I can, I have constantly questioned and confronted my executive level line manager, my public health colleagues and my peers, some of whom I have worked with for over 10 years now. As a result of my non-conformity, I have been labelled an anti-vaxxer and conspiracy nut, even though both my children have been fully vaccinated. And I myself, whilst working clinically, had my hepatitis vaccination. I am not anti-vaccine at all. I have been excluded from certain meetings. I've been openly ridiculed and laughed at in others. And most recently, I was told I needed to watch my step, as when cost-saving measures are required later this year, I may just find myself surplus to requirements. So Debbie is correct. Those delivering the programmes and injecting the public are simply following the orders relayed to them, and for the most part they are doing so naively, in the belief that they can trust the rhetoric dictated by senior management. However, there is total awareness of the issues and risks involved with these jabs at senior level within the NHS, and not just in my board. I have spoken with colleagues from other health boards who report the same issues. When I last faced up to my manager, I asked why they were content to be taking part in what amounted to, as far as I was concerned, to genocide. Their reply was chilling and left me feeling both disgusted and despairing. They agitatedly replied that we all have a job to do and a part to play, and we need to just put up, shut up and get it done. It was made very clear to me government were leaning heavily on health boards to ensure not only compliance with the jab programme, but that the boards met the targets set by the government. Brian, I have tried to recruit colleagues to the cause. I have had numerous conversations with nurses who have years of experience working in the NHS and who are also aware that things simply aren't right, but always to no avail. I am often told that it's futile and there's no point in speaking up or speaking out, as they, being management, just won't listen. Then there are those who are aware of what's going on and simply can't take the stress of being involved. They have gone off work long-term sick in their droves. There are also very many senior nurses who have taken early retirement over the last few months, all of them citing the current situation with the jabs and the whole COVID debacle as the reasons they just had to get out. You mentioned, Brian, when talking with Debbie, and I have heard similar sentiment elsewhere, that those NHS staff who have knowledge of what's taking place and who are not speaking out are complicit in the atrocity. Some even go so far as to demand nurses like me speak out as a moral duty, and they have no sympathy for us if we end up facing Nuremberg-style trials. But I have a mortgage to pay, two young children and all the bills for the whole house to cover after my partner was made redundant last year. I can't go public. If I did, I would most certainly never work in nursing again. And with the current climate of unemployment, what chance would I stand of getting a job, never mind one that would pay enough to cover our outgoings and keep a roof over my children's head? I hate my job. I am currently ashamed to be a nurse, and every day I work for the NHS, I feel greater despair and loathing. You mentioned GPs specifically to Debbie, and I thought I would relay a conversation I had just yesterday with a GP at one of our surgeries delivering the jabs. The GP in question knows of my direct involvement with the board's jab programme and had questioned me in regards to the forthcoming Moderna jab that we are to begin administering in April. Through the course of the conversation, I learned that the GP had taken the Pfizer jab herself. Aghast, I asked her, was she crazy considering the jab contained PEG, polyethylene glycol, also known as antifreeze? The GP didn't know the jab contained PEG. In fact, the GP didn't know any of the excipients in the jab at all, as they had never read the PIL or full prescribing documentation. I challenged this, stating that they couldn't fully obtain consent from their patients if they themselves weren't aware of the contents of the PIL. I then asked, were they informing their patients that they were taking part in a clinical trial? At this point, the colour drained from the GP's face as they rather sheepishly replied that they weren't. They were simply asking if the patient was happy to be followed up over a 2-year period for research. In all honesty, Brian, the GP didn't even know the jabs weren't approved or that they were still in clinical phase 3 trials. Tragically, this GP's lack of knowledge in regard to the jabs isn't rare. Again, recently, I had a conversation with an NHS consultant who took the Pfizer jab. They too didn't know they had taken part in a trial or that the jabs weren't approved. Brian, if consultants, GPs, nurses and pharmacists within the NHS aren't aware of this, how on earth can we expect the public to know? Lastly, I disagree with Debbie on one point. She stated that she felt sorry for her NHS colleagues who were essentially being set up. I disagree. My NHS colleagues have forsaken their duty of care, broken their code of conduct, Hippocratic Oath, and have been brainwashed just the same as the majority of the UK public through propaganda and predictive programming. When I trained as a nurse, it was ingrained in me to question everything, to never accept being told because we've always done it or because I'm telling you to. I learned that we were advocates for patients and it was our duty to protect them at all costs, and I learned to look for the evidence behind every treatment or medicine I was to provide a patient. Therefore, I am complicit too. Although I know about the safety issues and have tried repeatedly to get through to management and colleagues, I have failed. I can't recruit a single NHS colleague, be they nurse, doctor or pharmacist, to stand with me and speak out. I have gone to the union to look for them to support me, but predictably they told me I had no real case and it wouldn't be worth pursuing. As a lone voice, I will not be heard, but would lose my job, 23-year nursing career and my nursing registration. Of that, I have no doubt. For now, I am resigned to remain in my post. I will continue to be defiant and to challenge everyone at every opportunity to try to wake them up and see if they would be willing to side with me. If a time ever came when this genocide came to light, and if I ended up on trial testifying against those in positions of power who could have affected the outcomes, I would not hesitate to give evidence. I will also accept my fate should I too be found to have been duplicitous in this horrid act of human annihilation. I do not fear that day, Brian. Indeed, I pray for it to come.
Well, what just an incredible statement by that extremely brave lady. And of course, she raises a great number of points which the public in UK should be clamouring at every single MP to answer. If I just recap very briefly on some of the key things that she said: no safety data produced, no patient information leaflets so that patients can make proper informed decisions about being vaccinated, the fact that not even the doctors were aware that what was taking place was an experimental trial of vaccines. And of course, she's threatened. She knows that she runs the risk of losing her job for simply speaking out. So here we see the hounding of the whistleblowers, anybody inside the NHS telling the truth. She's talking about Nuremberg trials, and of course she should be talking about that because this is the severity of what we're dealing with. She talks about the fact that the patients are not getting the care and attention that they really need and should be getting under the NHS. She's talked about that lack of knowledge by the GPs, and she's ending by talking about genocide, the words of a person with great experience inside the NHS is talking about the British government's vaccine, COVID-19 vaccine program as genocide.
You're listening to Alan James on Circle of White Light Radio and People's Internet Radio.
Okay, folks, we're back, and that was an incredible whistleblower giving out information there about what's going on. Dr. Graham, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, you have a very brave lady there who's willing to speak out and really risk her career and her own economic status. So hats off to her for that, because this is somebody on the inside, and she says it's genocide, then I think we should take this very, very seriously. I mean, it's a strong word, genocide, to say whether they are deliberately going to try and kill us, which a lot of doctors and scientists come out. But I would say there is a risk here. These so-called vaccines, these genetically modified drugs that they're giving us, or should I say drugs to genetically modify us, we don't know their long-term outcome. We're playing Russian roulette, and we don't know what's going to happen in short-term future or the long-term future here.
Yeah, it's a concern. You have people like Professor Dolores Cahill and a number of other doctors, as you said, turning around and saying that this is a ticking time bomb waiting for it to happen, maybe in a few months, maybe in a couple of years' time, but it's inevitable that something's going to happen because this is an experimental drug. And as you say, it's Russian roulette, because you don't know, based on your metabolism, what way you're going to react to getting this. And as you said, you knew somebody who's now suffering from it.
I mean, you go back to Judy Mikovits, who's one of the original researchers, written a book on this. I mean, she claims it's a ticking time bomb. And it really goes back to what we wrote in the book, you know, all those years ago, Toxic Dentistry Exposed, and that not everybody gets ill when they're exposed to a particular toxin. It depends on your genetics. And because of your genetics, not everybody gets exactly the same symptoms. So the mercury, for instance, if I'm exposed to mercury, I get a heart condition because, you know, 40 years ago, I was sent home to, the doctor sent me home to die from a condition, a heart condition, because, as it turned out, I was being affected by mercury. Other people, when affected by mercury, will go down, say, the cancer route. Others will have an autoimmune disease. So exposure to the same toxin, what I'm really saying is exposure to the same toxin can have multiple outcomes. And I think we're probably facing the same here. I would agree with Dr. Mikovits that exposure to these mRNA vaccines, we'll see initially you will get cardiac events, and the neurotoxicity will come into things like multiple sclerosis and Alzheimer's. I think we'll spike in years to come, Parkinson's especially. But will that ever be tied back to the people who've been inoculated, or will it be seen as some kind of act of God?
Yeah, see, this is the thing, because we know that the big pharma is immune from prosecution, and they did that for a reason, because, you know, when money has to be paid out again, the taxpayer gets hit again.
I mean, if this stuff was so good, then why do they claim they want, you know, immunity from prosecution? Which, interestingly enough, is the same for fluoride here. The water companies would only put it in the water in the UK, provided they got a blanket immunity from the government. You know, so they wouldn't have it in otherwise. So they knew something was wrong with fluoridation. And of course, an island is a completely fluoridated country. I learned this from my son Alistair, who had the good fortune to marry an Irish girl called Edwina. They're living in Tullamore. And I'm hoping they're listening to this now, otherwise I'll cut them out of the will. But as you say, it's, you know, fluoride is just one of the toxins that we're all needlessly exposed to. There's no need for this. And the same for this vaccine. I don't know what the long-term agenda is. Maybe it's purely money. Maybe the conspiracy theorist is right. It's a type of eugenics. I really don't know. But I personally will not have this vaccine under any circumstances. You know, so people must actually, and I wouldn't advise people to have it, neither would I discourage them. What I would encourage them to do is to review the data. And if you review the data and you still want it, then I think you need your head examined.
Yeah, I think you have to do your own research. At the end of the day, there's two narratives. And a lot of people are just listening to the one narrative. I mentioned this on the show when I had Rachel Alexander on. She's a psychologist. And we talked about the prefrontal cortex being switched off, which is our critical thinking. And when you're in fear, you're in fight or flight mode. So you're not thinking straight because the dinosaur's after you and you have to fight or flight. You have to run or stay. You can't think critically. And the problem is, and this is the issue, a lot of people are in fear because the media and the government are pushing out the fear purposely to switch off that prefrontal cortex to stop them from thinking. And this is the problem. If I say, oh, a cup of tea has just come in. Thank you, dear. And this is the problem. And people don't understand what's going on. They keep switching from BBC to Sky to RTA and back again. And are just immersed in this fear. And they just don't understand that it's that's stopping them thinking logically.
Yeah, I mean, the fear has been deliberately instigated over here in the UK by the government. In fact, Sage, the government advisors, said that was a deliberate policy they recommended to the government to get their views across and to get us to accept the draconian things that they did to us. Okay. But what we have to do is really ignore mainstream media. You know, we have to listen to sort of people like yourselves and forget the mainstream, the Sky News, you know, the BBC, et cetera, especially the BBC, you know, because most journalists now just see themselves as just propaganda vehicles for whatever the government says, which is, I think, a disgrace for journalists. It's very few of you, and congratulations to you out there who are prepared to take the stand. And it's very important that you're doing what you're doing and keep up what you're doing. Extremely important.
Well, what you just said there, the Sage group, I think we have to just give that a mention. For people who don't know who Sage are, apparently they're a group of people, consultants, spin doctors, who will use psychology to manipulate the public. And obviously fear is one of the things they use and have put together. And you can guarantee that every country, even Ireland, will have their department of spin doctors and consultants to find out what is the best way to manipulate the people. So you have to look at the psychology, folks, of what's going on. But I'm preaching to the converted, really, on my show, because everybody that tunes in is open-minded and knows what's going on. It's getting the people who don't know what's going on. That's the thing. Okay, Dr. Graham, what we're going to do is we have a number of questions that have come in from the chat room. Thanks, everybody, for your questions. We're going to kick off with Joan's question. And she wants to know, I'm going to the dentist tomorrow. Any questions I should have ready to ask?
Yeah, well, it depends, Joan, really, on what you're having done. But what you should request is that if he's removing a mercury filling, what precautions is he taking to protect you from any mercury release? And what does he intend to put in your mouth? Is it, hopefully no metal. So these are the sort of things. Just ask him if it's a mercury filling or what's he doing. The patient should be informed about this. So you really need to be educated, folks out there. You really need to sit down and ask the dentist, what are you doing and why are you doing this? And they should be happy to explain. In fact, they have a duty to explain it. And if they try and just fob you off, then just be prepared to vote with your feet and go.
Tell me something, Dr. Graham. Here's a question for you. As a working dentist, if somebody like me came into you with a liability form and said, "Now, Dr. Graham, you're recommending this X, Y, and Z, and I've been told that this could actually harm me, harm my body down the line. Will you just sign this piece of paper to say that you are personally liable?" I mean, if somebody came in and did that to you, even going back to your, say, before you knew what was going on, would you actually sign that piece of paper, or would you just take the normal narrative from, "Oh, well, the government said it's safe and we trust the government, so there should be no problem with that"?
Well, yeah, I don't think you'll find any medical professional would be willing to sign that. I mean, you can certainly use that if you go to a vaccine. You know, you can ask the doctor to say, "If anything goes wrong with this vaccine, I'm going to hold you personally responsible for it." Then I don't think anyone would be prepared to sign that, because one of the things, of course, it means that they don't trust you. So you really can't work on a patient as a dentist if they don't trust, if you have a breakdown of trust. Because what the patient was really saying to me said, I don't really trust what you're doing, because we are liable for what we do. Therefore, if we harm the patient by what we're doing, you know, then we can be held accountable. We don't need to sign a bit of paper for it.
Does a dentist have a Hippocratic oath as well?
We were told about, well, in the UK, the Hippocratic Oath isn't given to either doctors or dentists, and hasn't been for years. Okay. I mean, I graduated in 1971, and none of the doctors graduating with me then got it. They were told about it, but it was seen as a sort of anachronism. But it's out there anyway as a sort of given that you shouldn't harm the patient by what you do, in theory. But then... neither medicine nor dentistry really cares about the patient. They really care about themselves first and foremost, and you know, their own economic being, have their own egos. All this is more important than care of the patient. They say the patient comes first, but it's fairly obvious that the patient does not come first.
Right, okay, that's interesting. Okay, Jim wants to know a question. What does Dr. Graham think of implants?
I think, oh dear, you have opened the can of worms now.
Okay.
And it's a big one. Dealing with people who've been seriously ill because they've been poisoned down the years, I would regard implants as the devil's children for many reasons. One, the majority of them is their titanium, and the patients are told titanium is inert, and titanium is not. It's a transitional element. It goes from your mouth, bits of titanium will end up in the spleen. You get what you call titanium bloom in the bone, 2 centimetres in the dental bone, round about there will become contaminated with titanium. And, of course, it conducts the electric currents going through. And the other thing is, of course, imagine it like a fence post. It's a good analogy. You know, you banged a fence post in, and it was a farmer who told me this, an Irish farmer, actually, because we have a lot of Irish patients. He said, "If I banged in a fence post, sooner or later," he says, "it'll rot because stuff will get in from the top down there." And, of course, this is what they do. They say it's sealed up and you get bony contact. But even on a successful implant is when 60% of the implant is covered with bone. But that means 40% isn't. And so there's a gap between the implant and the bone. And if there's a gap there, bugs will grow there, and bugs will grow, and that'll come, and they'll cause the problem. So, no, we saw endless problems with implants, both titanium and the zirconium ones. Zirconium ones, which are metal-free, were better, but they also had significant drawbacks due to the fact that you could get infection going from the mouth itself, which has billions upon billions of bacteria, and they go down the implant into the bone.
Right, okay. Well, there is a question about zirconium implants down the line. But we'll get that to that in a few minutes. Another question from Jim, and he says, "Is it true that about 85% of women who have had deep root canal treatment end up with breast cancer?"
Oh, now, Jim, that really is an interesting question. I don't know the stats, because I don't know if anyone's ever done the stats, but we can say, due to the work of Dr. Lechner in Germany, that... It's But there is actually an analogy to COVID here, and it's cytokines. Cytokines are a messenger. And when you have these chronic infections from NECOs, which are neuralgia-inducing cavitational osteitis, or root canals, there's no difference between a deep root canal and a shallow root canal, just a root canal. Then this causes inflammation. This inflammation leads to these special form of cytokines being produced in the body. And if you are, again, that genetically susceptible, the same cytokines seem to influence breast cancer. So, for instance, what we found in practice was that breast cancer patients would have the infection always on the same side as they got the cancer, whether it come from a root filling or not. And you'd actually find that with thermography, because you could actually track the thing because of increased temperature going down. So he found actually a biochemical reason why you should get this. So I would say there is a theoretical possibility. It's backed up by a lot of science. But actually, to put a number on it, I couldn't put a number on it.
Okay, because that's interesting. The whole idea of the root canal, and I've heard this about the flow of energy. You know, we all have chi energy and energy in us and the flow of energy around our body, and you have acupuncture and energy healing. And when you get a root canal done, it actually disrupts the electrical energy around your gums and your teeth because of that. Have you heard of that?
Yes. And for a time, we actually measured sort of the electric current that went, because there was a theory that what we call sequential removal, you would remove the amalgams that were most electrically active, and the same for root fillings. You can measure their toxicity. You'd remove the most toxic ones first. But we never actually found it benefited a patient by doing this. What we have found is something really, really basic here. In a root filled tooth is a piece of dead tissue, and it's the only time or the only area of medicine where a dead tissue is allowed to remain in the mouth. For instance, I mean, if you had, say, your thumb, and we said, oh, well, sorry about this. You've got an infection on your thumb. We're going to mummify it, which is effectively what we're doing, and it'll be all right. I mean, any doctor and any patient would think, yeah, you're stark staring mad, you know, you've got an infection, a chronic infection like that, you take it out. But dentists don't. They allow these chronic infections to stay, and they're constantly releasing toxins and constantly releasing bacteria into the body. And that can cause a myriad of problems. It's dead tissue, and it's the only place in the mouth that medicine allows dead tissue to stay. And so would you have a piece of necrotic tissue 2 centimetres from your brain?
No, I don't think so. And I think that's very important for dentists to obviously make that a point to remove, and for people to, you know, question the dentist. I think this 100% belief in our doctors and dentists, and I'm not being bad when I say this, but we do have this belief system. Do you remember the study they did? I think it was in the 60s or 70s, Dr. Graham, where they dressed a guy up in a white outfit, and they told the guy that he was a doctor. And every time he pressed the button, he could hear somebody being electrocuted behind him. Now, the person behind him was obviously an actor pretending to be electrocuted. But because the guy was dressed up in a white suit and he was looked official, and he said, oh, well, I'm a doctor, the guy kept on pressing the button, and the guy behind the curtain was screaming his head off, pretending to be electrocuted, and he would still do it because he was told to do it by this guy in the white coat.
Yeah, it's an interesting experiment. There's been two big studies done on that. But the Germans have it right, because they call the dentist there the gods in white. You know, you have a white coat on, therefore you're the god. I once went into a German dental practice, and above the door he said, "Please do not talk to the doctor. He is a busy man." You know, so there is this, and they do have egos. I mean, medical and dental egos are huge. I'd say they're the worst in the world, which is one of the reasons why we're in this trouble now, in that once they've stated a position, they've stated it, and they can't back down. So, you know, we'll all go to hell in a blanket before they'll actually admit they were wrong, purely because of their egos.
Yeah.
I did have a patient, if I can say this, who was a psychologist, And she did some research on that, and she said that she found out that doctors and dentists all were, I'll use her words now, were psychological cripples in the fact that they identified with their job to such a degree that the job actually became them, and that's why they were attracted into that particular type of work. Therefore, if you criticize their work, you are actually criticizing them deeply personally, which is why they reacted to it. And the higher up they went, in other words, the consultants, senior consultants, the bigger this gap in their personality was, and the more they needed to fill it in. And so that's quite an interesting, because I have seen that sort of aspect a little bit in myself. Obviously, I'm only one of the small fry down here, but it's interesting. So, yeah, just regard the doctors and dentists as psychological cripples and you'll be okay.
Yeah, the ego is a big issue with certain professions. The three professions that I've come across is the medical profession, the legal profession, and the accountancy finance profession, where you get people with major egos. I've experienced this from the financial profession, where because they knew how to do accounting and bookwork, it made them experts in IT as well, which was my background. And as I said, I learned from everybody, and I'd never think I knew everything. But when they actually think what they think they know and what they actually know are two different things. They thought they knew what they were talking about, but actually they didn't, you know. And they're the three professions that I've come across that seem to have this ego issue that you people have to deal with. Okay, question from Critical Ali. And she says, question for Dr. Graham. Is Dr. Graham aware of the great work of Dr. Jerry Tennant? His study on pH and voltages in the body, he links most inflammation and infections and toxins in the body come from root treatments and mercury fillings. And she put up a quick link on YouTube.
Yes, I've read Dr. Tennant's book and seen him lecture to the in America. We quite agree that the basis to this is pH, which has been completely ignored. I mean, we could have a whole podcast just on pH, which is really the alkaline or acidity balance of the body and how your body reacts. And then he does a tie to different types of voltage, too, where I believe where he says if you had an operation in the scars, then the scars will prevent the passage of electric currents through these the body as it should be done, and that can lead to harm. Though I do think the body has a way around that by sort of bypasses it and works out other circuits. Yes, I have heard of him. I think he's very good, and he's you know we agree with his work on mercury and root fillings.
Brilliant. Okay, Shane wants to know a question from Shane. Can you do a detox if you have ceramic crowns with metal underneath?
Ah, well, yeah, you can always do, you've got some really good questions there, haven't you?
I have great, intelligent listeners. What can I say?
Yeah, I can tell you this. I'm impressed. I've done a few talks here and there to various things, but this is a really good one. Metal crowns, well, first of all, what's the metal underneath? Don't forget, it won't be a pure metal. It'll be an alloy, which means a mixture of, and it could be gold alloy. They could have palladium in there. They could have all sorts of different metals. I think there's over 1,000 different metals licensed to be put into the mouth. So it's any combination of those that we don't need. It might not be what we call a non-precious. It could be a non-precious crown, which means it could be made of nickel, which is highly allergic and poisonous. So you don't know. So yes, you can do a detox, and we would certainly recommend that people. With care, and I do say with care, depending on their own medical condition, do detoxes. But if you have a metal crown, depending on the sort of metal that's in there, then that will continue to poison you. But any detox should release some of the metals, and you should be able to get rid of some of the metals. So the get rid of any poison is good for you.
Yeah, the one thing I'm concerned about, and they talk about the health of the teeth. I know you say we had good questions there from the listeners, which are fantastic. But our teeth are, I think they tell us about our body and our health. I don't know whether you agree with that. And I know they said that certain issues you can have with your teeth could also cause the likes of heart attacks and certain medical issues with your body. So would you say that your mouth is your kind of window to the health of your body?
Yeah, we called it, it's a mirror to what's going on, whether, you know, you're basically acid or alkaline, and what sort of toxins are there that are going down. Because don't forget, the mouth is just the top end of a giant tube that goes right the way through the body. And stuff that goes down there gets distributed all over the body. So we say, yes, the mouth is a window onto your health. It's very appropriate.
Okay. Dave T has a question. Dr. Graham, I'm scheduled to replace a front tooth with a zirconia electrical neutral ceramic implant by Swiss Dental Solutions. Do you think it's a good choice? Thanks.
Personally, I wouldn't have it done. No, I wouldn't have it done. Several reasons for this. Although it's they claim to be electrically neutral, but then it depends on your definition of electrically neutral. It certainly doesn't conduct electricity like, say, titanium ones do. Zirconium implants do come with their own problems. That if you have a tooth out, you have to say, why are you losing this tooth? If it's being infected, then the bone round about it is infected. If then you stick an implant in after a tooth has been extracted, what effectively you're doing is putting a plug into that area and preventing the bone from healing up, and the chronic infection will continue. And this is what we did see quite a lot of the times. And even though the implant can look okay on the X-ray, people's health can spiral down. I mean, we had innumerable patients who've been saying, they had teeth taken out, they waited until the bone healed up, they had ultrasound scan to show the bone was healthy, they had zirconia implants, the implants looked perfect on the X-ray, and they were told that because their health went down, it had nothing to do with them. And then they came to us, and I could actually get these implants with my fingers and unscrew them from the bone, even though they looked okay, and then they got well. So my experience with zirconium is not positive.
Okay, I hope that helps, Dave. Joan wants to know, she said, does he feel the same for root canal treatment? So Joan earlier on asked you about, she's going to the dentist tomorrow, and you mentioned about the amalgams, and she wants to know, is it the same? Is your approach the same regarding root canal also?
Yes. Root canals are quite in emergency, and I can understand people said, you know, that they don't want to so-called lose their teeth because of it. But I accept that, you know, then I used to say, okay, then, you know, you can keep the root canal teeth and you can look pretty in your coffin. That's fine. That's a personal choice. We've nothing against that. But all root canals will become chronically infected. These chronic infections will release bacteria and toxins into your body. What they will do to your body, we don't know. There's no way of finding out. If you're prepared to accept that risk, fair enough, provided they tell you that there is a risk, then I've no problems with it. But it is a risk, but it's not quantifiable.
Okay, so whoever has a root canal, regardless, they will at some point become infectious?
Not necessarily. At some point, they're infectious from day one, by their very nature. They cannot be made sterile.
So what is the solution?
The only solution we found was what you do for any area of chronic infection. You just have to take it out and you have to clean the bone. We had a complete protocol for actually cleaning the bone out because these infections spread. I mean, you cut your finger and it gets infected. What does it do? It spreads. And it's exactly the same in the mouth. It spreads. And so we used to have to chase these infections through the bone until we found healthy bone, curetting diseased bone out and washing it out and putting ozone in and killing the bacteria and on and on and on. That's what we did. Because a lot of the time, you say, especially in wisdom teeth, lower wisdom teeth, the teeth would come out and then the dentist would sew it up. But what it's effectively doing is still leaving the infection behind there. Because there's a poor blood supply in the area, the infection then stays and becomes chronic, and that's when you get these cavitations and NECOS comes, and the whole health and things go down. You know, we spent sort of 40 years doing that. But, you know, it's still not accepted in mainstream dentistry, unfortunately.
So what is the alternative? So if somebody has had a root canal and say they want to get it replaced, what is the alternative besides obviously having a root canal?
Well, it's again, it depends where it is and what tooth that's going, how many that are going out, what particular, what the whole mouth looks like and functions like, what the upper teeth jaw to the upper, the relationship of the upper jaw to the lower jaw. It's very, very personal. It could be that you could use it through an inlay bridge by putting two fillings either side and replacing a tooth with a bridge that way. It could be that you go with a gap. It could be that you go with a small nylon type denture. Those are really sort of bridge work or bridge work or denture or leave the gap.
What do all these stars get, like the Hollywood stars and stuff like that, when they're told that get your smile sorted, you're going to be on camera? What do they get done? Do you know?
Ah, well, they get relieved of a lot of money for a start.
Because,
yeah, you know, I'm happy to say it's the dentists are making a good living out of it, but and so the laboratories. But what they get done by and large is you see them all with these even white teeth. And, you know, they've all been crowned or veneered, which means most of the tooth substance has been removed and replaced with ceramic. And if a tooth is way out of position, then it might have a root filling because then you could put a post in that tooth to make it look as if it's in a better position. But most of them have extensive restorative dentistry, and I would think that most of them will pay a price for it later on in life.
Well, I suppose they're making their money now so they can pay for the nurses and doctors they're going to need later on, I suppose.
You've said it.
That's probably how they're saying it. Okay, question from Joan. Is there any vitamin or something that can help regarding amalgams or root canal?
Yes. You have to think that these are inflammations. They all cause inflammation, which is oxidative stress. You know, mercury causes oxidative stress in the body, especially in the brain, and infections and toxins released by the infections cause this oxidative stress. So it's really antioxidants that you need to combat this oxidative stress. And the best one and the cheapest one is vitamin C, which is the one we used. We used it intravenously. It's reasonably cheap. It's very, very effective. And you need it on a daily basis. Yeah, I also think of antioxidants, vitamin C, vitamin D, of course, especially with the COVID situation, and vitamin E. You can think like alpha lipoic acid, and certain minerals such as magnesium and zinc. They're important too.
What do you think of the likes of tooth pulling with coconut oil and sodium bicarb, and using brushing teeth with sodium bicarb? Would you recommend them at all?
Yeah, sodium bicarb I like because sodium bicarb is very alkaline and it will reduce the pH of the mouth and make it more neutral. So that is a smart idea. Oil pulling, we had a lot of patients do oil pulling and I've done it myself. And I say you definitely do feel better after it's been done. There have been so-called studies which have been poorly executed on this, which says it has no known benefit. It's tricky oil pulling because they say you have this oil in your mouth and you keep it there for 3 or 4 minutes. I don't know about you, but, you know, I put a bit of oil in the mouth and after about 30 seconds, it's filled so much with saliva, I think I'm about to drown. I think it's a good idea if you get a nice clean oil. It'll certainly make your mouth feel better. And anything, I think, that feels better and can't do you any harm must be good.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the sodium bicarb is good, but it tastes foul and it's all kind of lumpy and bitty. But I know it's an alkaline.
Ah, yeah, but if it didn't taste foul, it wouldn't do you any good. Remember, that's what your mum told you for medicine, didn't she?
Yeah. You have to stick a load of sugar into it, you see. Sweeten it up a bit. Yeah, that would be a bad idea. Okay, Cool Liam has a question, and he says, what is Dr. Graham's opinion on those Hollywood small clip-on teeth?
Ah, the clip-on teeth. Oh, that goes way back, doesn't it, to the Shirley Temple days pre-war. Actually, you know, it's probably if you really need to do it in certain situations, if you want to do that, provided it's designed correctly and it shouldn't do any harm for a small cosmetic. I can't see why anyone should want to do that, maybe for a photograph or something. But the clip-on teeth are probably the least intrusive way of doing it. Anything that's removable from the mouth is preferable to anything that's fixed in.
Yeah, just Joan said there, she missed a comment regarding the bicarb. Yeah, Dr. Graham said that nothing wrong with using bicarb for your mouth to cleanse it. It's alkaline. So just to let Joan know. And a question from Jim. And Jim wants to know, only solution for tooth loss dentures?
No, it's not. They're not the only solution. That's one of the safest solutions, but you can have a bridge work where a missing tooth is, if you like, attached to the teeth either side of the gap, or on one side anyway. It can be what's called a free end. So bridge work under certain conditions is possible, but there's so many variations and caveats with this. So individual case has to be done by individual case.
Yeah, see, it's great that we have somebody like you on the show, Dr. Graham, because I find myself now, you know, and as I say, the dentist that I did visit seems like he's spot on, he's very open-minded. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, he'll obviously give me a list of options, and this has not got to do with him personally. It's just it could be anybody, and you're kind of second guessing, and you think, well, is that the best for me, or that's just your recommendation? Should I go and get another opinion, and then when I have two or three opinions, I'll form a view from there. And this is the thing, you know, I mean, we talked about this complete trust in our doctor and our dentist and everything else. And to a certain extent, okay, you know, they are trained and everything else. But now that everything's come forward regarding the likes of amalgams and mercury and the vaccines and everything else, you have to kind of question certain things. And if they turn around and say things like, oh yeah, well, you know, we recommend that you clean your teeth every day and you go and buy Colgate or whatever the toothpaste is, but that's full of fluoride. So I'm thinking, okay, so if they're recommending something to me which I know is bad, then that means they're not really understanding what's going on.
Yeah, you've hit a very good point there. I mean, you can only make a decision based on information, so the more information you have, the better. But you have to trust the person who's doing it, and really just trust your gut here. What does your gut instinct say? And if you've said it now, I mean, so what triggers you is if they say Colgate, go and use Colgate, then it has fluoride. It either means they don't know the disadvantages of a fluoride toothpaste. Remember, there's enough fluoride in the tube of toothpaste to kill a six-year-old child. They don't know that, or they do know and they don't care. So do you want to go to a dentist who doesn't care about your health, or do you want to go to a dentist who hasn't bothered to keep up to date, who doesn't know?
Yeah, that's a concern, you know, and maybe it's a good way to test them as well when you say, what toothpaste do you recommend? You know, do you have all these adverts on TV and you go, oh, well, my dentist recommends Sterident. You know, there's an old black and white TV advert. It was done in 1949, and you see the doctor in the surgery with the cigarette, and it goes, my doctor recommends Camel cigarettes. And we did a survey with all these doctors and they recommend Camels. It's great for your throat. And this was in 1949. And obviously, you know, we look at it now and laugh and think, how ridiculous was that? Now we know about smoking. But will we be doing the same thing in a few years' time when the doctors are saying, oh, you go out and buy X product that has fluoride in it, or mouthwash with fluoride in it. And then in 10 years' time, we'll find out that actually, we know it's all rubbish.
Absolutely. You're quite right. The smoking analogy is a good one. And since, you know, you're exposed to so much fluoride in your environment in Ireland anyway, why would you need extra fluoride from the toothpaste? Because how much fluoride are you getting in on a daily basis? I mean, it's you know, it is completely ridiculous. Don't forget, the half the fluoride that you absorb in your body stays there forever. You never get rid of it. It builds up. And long term, that can cause, in fact, will cause, you know, serious problems. I mean, the whole thing about fluoride is again, it's against common sense and it's against the published science.
Yeah, totally. Now, we have another question, more questions coming in. Dr. Graham, I'm just watching the time there, so we'll have to obviously talk about, you know, a few positives as well, what's going on. But Shane wants to know a question. Is flossing bad for children? And also, I have seen on YouTube showing that brushing with the inside of a banana skin is good for teeth whitening. What does he think of this?
I've no idea about that. I suggest he's watching too much YouTube, really.
Okay.
So that one I'll pass on. Let's go to the flossing one. Flossing is there just to disturb the dental plaque, not necessarily to remove it. It's just to disturb it, because it can only become damaging to teeth if it's organized. And if you stir it up, the bugs take 12 hours to sort themselves out so they can attack you again. So flossing is a good idea, but you don't want to impinge too much on the child so it becomes really a chore, so they rebel against it. And be very gentle, because you just want to click between the teeth. You don't want to go into the gums, because I have seen gums injured by people using floss and sort of plunging it deep down into the gums and sawing it away. So circumspectly and gently, yeah, it's a good idea.
Be careful. Okay, Bluebell wants to know, I have a friend that has a sensation in her mouth like a hairy, like a hair. Any ideas what that might be?
Really not enough information. You can get what's called, is it this sort of hairy tongue? Do you look in it and you get this, literally it looks like a black hairy tongue, which is one condition. Or it could be that there is something trapped between the teeth, which neither the dentist can see or the patient can't see. And it can be the devil's own to get out. But really, you would think, go to the dentist or hygienist and ask for some proper cleansing and see if that gets rid of it.
Yeah, I think doing the proper clean would be a big help for everybody. That's what I'm lined up to do, to get that done. It won't do any harm anyway. Another question from Critical Alley, a question for Dr. Graham. Any organic solutions for morning halitosis? I don't like the harsh alcohol type mouthwashes.
No, very good. I don't like the harsh alcohol-based mouthwashes and the chlorhexidines and things as well, because they do alter the bugs, and the bugs actually, it does alter their genetics too, because they have to survive this harsh environment, and you don't want that. So you have to think that most of the halitosis, it comes from bacteria sort of deep in the throat. First of all, it can come from, say, the stomach, from rotting food within the intestines, producing gas and coming up. It can be like garlic comes from the way it's detoxified. It comes out in the lungs and you breathe it out there. Or it comes out from the bacteria that you find in the mouth. So, you know, we shouldn't really regard bacteria as our enemy, as we have done now in modern medicine. Bacteria is our enemy. Bacteria, there are more bacteria in us than our own cells or living organisms in us of various kinds. And so we coexist with them. They are necessary for our health. But certain types of bugs do produce hydrogen sulfide, and it's a hydrogen sulfide gas that you actually smell. So really a strict hygiene regime, the use of floss, and the use of a mouthwash, something quite gentle. Say a grapefruit seed extract is a nice one, or olive leaf extract, and just sort of gargle and rinse and spit out that, or even oil pulling, all that can help.
Yeah, I use aloe vera toothpaste that's non-fluoride, and the aloe vera mouthwash non-fluoride as well.
Yeah, another solution. Very, very good.
Yeah, that's what I use, and I find that fine. Again, it's natural more so than using the products that you find actually in the supermarkets. The question about the hair in her mouth, Bluebell said it's when she swallows, she feels there's a hair there.
Well, without I haven't got enough information. Is it here? Where is it? What is it? Is it always there?
You know? It could be anything.
Maybe. It could be anything. We'll pass on that one.
Yeah, it could be. She'd need to get it checked out anyway, Bluebell.
Yep.
Get probably, not a camera, but get a torch down there to see what's going on. And let me see, just watching the time there very quickly, Jay wants to know, which oil does Doc think is best for oil pulling? He uses coconut oil.
I think coconut oil is the best. Personally, that's the one that I would use. And then coconut oil is actually very good if you take it and swallow it for cognitive function too. It's one of the things recommended. Yeah, they can actually see changes within the brain, positive changes within the brain within 2 minutes of swallowing coconut oil. So, I would go with coconut oil.
Yeah, there's a lady that was on an OIM years ago, and she gave her husband coconut oil, and she's seen a marked increase because her husband suffered from dementia, and she's seen a marked increase, and they found something in the coconut oil that made that difference.
Yep.
There's something in there. Can you actually buy the oil? Because when I see coconut oil in a jar, it's in solid form. Is there a liquid form for the oil?
It depends on the temperature. I mean, it does solidify at room temperature. But if you just take a spoonful and stick it in the mouth, within a few seconds it'll be melted and go to oil.
Okay, cool. Okay, well, listen, I'm keeping an eye on the time, and I want to talk to you about the way forward and what's going to be going on, what you feel is going to be happening with the COVID and your plans. So I don't know. I mean, what's your plans? What are you planning to do? And what have you had a kind of a crystal ball for the next year now coming up to December? What do you see happening?
Oh, well, I'm quite positive about it. I mean, I hope to go on a demonstration in London. Not that it'll be reported on the BBC this coming Saturday. Now, I've been on other ones of this. You know, an elderly lad with silver hair waving a banner. But, you know, I'll definitely be there. No, I'm quite positive because there seems to be a light being shone on this. There's so many educated and erudite people, again, like Cahill and all these groups all over the world fighting back about this. I don't think the narrative will stand up and it will collapse. And it'll be like a snowball running downhill. At the minute, it seems very dark. I quite agree. It does seem dark. But I think it'll unravel and unravel very quickly. And so by December, I would see this whole thing with COVID passports and everything, vaccine passports disappearing. And the situation being seen more for what it is. I'm just a little bit worried that we might be seeing the first effects of people who've suffering ill health due to the vaccination, then. But that is what it is. But no, by and large, I'm positive. I don't think the narrative will hold together now, and the more and more light's been shining on the situation, it's good.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a big change. The two things that are going to be catalysts, I think, for people to wake up is, one, they're trying to go after the kids and give the kids the vaccine, and there's a lot of parents, a lot of mums and dads going, no way, that's not going to happen, right? So that'll be a game changer. And then obviously, unfortunately, the people who have been vaccinated, if we start seeing people having severe issues with the vaccine or deaths, that's going to be a wake-up call as well.
Yeah, I mean, for kids, well, why do you vaccinate them when they have literally zero fatalities from this disease? And the overall mortality of COVID, I just looked up the figures this afternoon, is 0.15. You know, it's ridiculous. You know, it's similar to flu. And no one wants their kids vaccinated against a disease they're not going to get with a vaccine that may end up and damage them and is going to alter their genetics for the rest of their life. And then the other thing, of course, is a lot of over here, the care workers and NHS, there's a significant number, around about 20% are refusing the vaccines. So if the care workers and the NHS workers won't get the vaccines, and they can't mandate it, because if these people will just leave the health service, then the whole thing will collapse. So the more of us who just say no, then the quicker this whole thing will come to an end. I think you're quite right.
I think it's more and more people are beginning to wake up. More doctors are coming forward. I mean, over the interviews that I've done on the show with people, and regular listeners will know, that it's the energetics are all wrong. The intent for this is such a low frequency, and it's going in the opposite direction of where we are going with regarding frequencies and energy. And this is why it's not going to work. And every time they try and bring out another lie, you need something. Somebody said something like, you need to have 1,000 lies for every lie, because every lie that you come out with, you have to cover up with another lie. And this is what's happening. And they just keep pumping out lies after lie after lie, or making mistakes and showing their own incompetence of what's going on. And people, even people who are very controlled by the system, will start waking up, because this has been a major wake-up call for a lot of people on a planetary level who are in the matrix, or who are, you know, controlled and manipulated by the system. And they've suddenly realized, hang on a minute, I've just lost my dad or my mother or my brother, sister. They've had that vaccine, and all of a sudden they're putting it down on the death cert that it's a COVID death when they didn't die of COVID. Either the vaccine has affected them, or somebody died of a heart attack and they put on COVID. So they're all being exposed for what they're doing. And the NHS worker that I played the audio earlier on that is exposing, we need more people like them to come out and expose what's going on.
Yeah, I'm 100% in agreement with you. It's our intent that counts here, and that, because in fact that our intentions are good, and the fact that hopefully we do actually resonate at higher frequencies, this will in fact win. It really becomes down to sort of awareness. This whole COVID event is a mirror to show people where they are on the awareness scale, to those who are aware, like yourselves and your listeners, who won't take the vaccines, who question this, who know where they're going, who realize what you need to do with sort of meditation and intention, etc., and those who've sort of swallowed this whole 3D illusion that we're living in at the minute. So, yeah, I 100% agree with you.
What's the situation? Do you have a group of dentists that you talk to who are open-minded and who are beginning to open up? What is the situation in dentistry? Is there a group, or are there dentists who are beginning to see what's going on?
It's a bit like raisins in a pudding. There's one or two here and there, but generally not. We do meet. There's a group of us in Europe, and we meet up in a group in America. And between America and Europe, we're a couple of thousand strong. And that's about it. There are more and more dentists who are coming onto the mercury-free bandwagon for commercial reasons, because they see it to be a practice builder. We are fairly small. But we are making a big effort, and why we're winning now is because we're with the United Nations Environment Programme and the Minamata Convention. And the Minamata Convention is to do with the environment, and it's to stop putting mercury out into the environment. And, of course, dentists are the biggest polluters nowadays of mercury into the environment. Well, so the UN is coming out, and it's already banned for pregnant women and children under 14 throughout the EU. And pretty soon it'll be for all women and then all children in the EU. And then the next thing it'll be adults. So mercury is going to be stopped, and hopefully I think Europe has set the date of 2030. They want to see mercury out, not for health reasons, but for environment reasons. But it really doesn't matter what they're banning it for. It should stop soon.
And your wife was a dentist as well. And what's her take on it? Is she on the same him-she as yourself regarding what's going on?
In fact, that's how we met, in that... When she graduated, she's Danish, but went to a Swedish dental school, and she was told, you know, amalgams are safe and this and not a problem. Then she found out her professor who was teaching her had an amalgam-free private practice where he was telling his patients, for God's sake, don't have this stuff, it ruins you. And so when she questioned him, he said, well, you know, this is what I'm paid to teach you this, so I'll teach you this. So she got so angry at that, and then so she wanted to. So that's how she got into it. So yeah, she's in total agreement.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's brilliant that you have a partner that's you know, on the same hymn sheet as you. And for dentists who actually tune in, and hopefully they listen to this show, it's great that you have a few thousand dentists getting together and exposing what's going on, obviously with the fluoride and everything else, because it has to be exposed. They have to know, and they have to put their ego to one side and say, right, I want to look into this and find out more. So we have hit that time, and a big thank you, Dr. Graham, for coming back on the show and telling us all about what's been going on and answering all the questions from the listeners as well, because it's very rare that we'd have like somebody like yourself. You know, I like interviewing doctors and dentists, and you're the only dentist, to be honest with you, I've interviewed. I'd like to get more dentists on and get their viewpoint on what's going on, and build up a number of interviews from different people. So thank you for coming on and answering the questions for the listeners. Now we have to mention your book, because when I did first interview you on Open Your Mind Radio, you sent me a copy of the book. Thank you very much for that. And it's called Toxic Dentistry Exposed. I found it very interesting. Parts of it technical, way beyond my pay grade, but I found it very interesting nonetheless. And I do recommend people get it, because it's a good read and it's a good information for you to have. Can you tell us about a quick mention on the book and where people can find it?
The book Toxic Dentistry Exposed, I wrote that really for patients, so they could sort of easily get their head around it, the toxic possibilities they can get. I mean, doctors, they say, bury their mistakes. I mean, unfortunately, so do a lot of dentists. And that you can be the modern dentistry can easily affect your health. And so it's really to give information out there to the patient, to the different possibilities exist. And the best way of getting it is it's on Amazon at the minute. So you can just order it online. It's probably the best way.
Yeah. Okay. Now, I know you're retired, obviously, but do you want people to contact you, or do you have a contact email address if people want to email you, or do you want to give that out, or what do you want to remain private, or what do you want to do?
No. I'm happy to talk and communicate with people. Probably the best email to do is I can give it out now. It's just gmh@steeps.net.
Right. Just say that one more time.
gmh@steeps.net. Steeps is STEEPS.
Fantastic. So, Dr. Graham, thank you very much for coming on to the show. Much appreciated. Great information. The listeners are asking for a part two. So maybe in a few months' time, you might do a part two if you're up for that.
Happy to do it.
Fantastic. Okay, Dr. Graham, stay with me there for a minute. I'm just going to go off to musical break. I just want to tell the listeners that this song I'm going to play was sent over to me by a person who I didn't think was open-minded what's going on. And I thought, this is interesting. I've never played it before on the show, but have a listen to it. And it's not my kind of type of music either, but have a listen to it anyway and see what you think. And we'll talk to you on the far side.
You're listening to Alan James on Circle of White Light Radio and People's Internet Radio.
I'll put that on the actual playlist on the songs before the show starts for next week. It was sent over to me by an individual I didn't think was kind of open-minded, and I thought, well, that's actually not too bad of a song. It's on YouTube, okay? So if you go over to YouTube, it's called Lotan Rhythm Italo Escacha Global Experiment. I mean, I know I'd have to type it all. If you hang on after I close the show, I'll type it in the chat room, and then you can just copy and paste it into YouTube and you'll find it. But if you type in Lothan and then Global Experiment, I'm sure you'll find it on YouTube. Anyway, it's quite a catchy tune, and it covers it covers obviously all the subject matter that we're talking about. Obviously, I didn't play it all there because I had to come back in and talk about a few things. But it's a catchy tune. I actually like it. Now, during the week, there's an article in the journal that was sent off to me by Danny, who's a listener to the show, a long-time listener. And in the journal, they're trying to make out that conspiracy theorists, it's a mental health issue. Honest to God, unbelievable. And the journal had, "I hung up for the last time, how I lost my partner to conspiracy theories." Now, it's obviously the article was written by, from an area of ignorance, because we all know that relationships are going through hard times at the moment, especially when one half of the relationship, the person wakes up and the other one doesn't, and then the end does an energy change, and then all of a sudden your partner waves somewhere down the line. It's happening, and it happens, and it's going on now, and it'll carry on going on. It's just a fact of life. If the two of you are not woken up in the relationship, then it's not going to work, because you do become a different person. The things that you used to like together, you don't like anymore, because you realize that, you know, I don't actually like watching that TV anymore because it's actually brainwashing, and everything else happens. So, and unfortunately, the person who wrote the article, who didn't give their name, is writing it from their point of view, and not from their point of view. So they're only seeing one viewpoint. They didn't actually speak. I don't think they spoke to anybody who actually knows what's going on. And then they'd have a good balance of a narrative to write in the article. So it's one-sided. And they're trying to say that, you know, the whole conspiracy theory thing is mental health. Now, if we go back to 1963 when JFK was killed, and then people start investigating the whole killing, and then 1967, I believe, is the date the CIA came out with the two words conspiracy theorist, the oxymoron, like social distancing. And that was put out there purposely to so people wouldn't start asking questions. And if you did, you were called a conspiracy theorist. Well, maybe the new conspiracy theorist for 2021 is mental health, inverted commas. Oh, it's mental health. So you cannot question the narrative. You're not allowed to question what you're being told. You have to believe everything you're being told by the government, by the media. And if you step aside and you question what you're being told, that's a mental health issue. You're a conspiracy theorist. Honest to God, that is some level of arrogance, trying to push that and thinking people are going to believe it. So it's ridiculous. It is madness. But this is what they're trying to do. So now, also, one time when I posted up the whole conspiracy theorist 1967 thing, somebody did send me a post, and they said, "Oh, by the way, that them two words, conspiracy theorist, was used back in the 1800s. So I can't find the article that was written about it and how they used it back then. So I know we all think it was from 1967, but apparently this guy had information, and he sent me the link that telling me that the word conspiracy theorist was actually used before 1967. So something of a trivial interest there. I need to find the article. It was a long time ago. I need to track it down. But apparently there's an article out there with they talk about it being used before 1967. Okay, my guest on the show next week is a lady called Bebe Backus. And Bebe Backus was jailed for 8 years, set up basically, and jailed innocently for 8 years for a crime that she didn't commit. She was a realtor or an estate agent. And they were. They said that because the person she was dealing with was a criminal, they thought she was laundering money, which she wasn't, and she got locked up for 8 years, falsely accused of doing that. So in the 8 years that she was in jail, she started learning about the straw man and the UCC codes, commercial courts, and all the legal stuff that we all have talked about before. So, Bebe's going to be on the show next week. And it'll be very interesting to have a talk to her about all this, about the Stormont commercial courts. And we'll even go down to parking tickets. What happens when you get a parking ticket? It's an offer of a contract. What do you do with it? And then does, you know, bench warrants and all that. So we'll get into the legal side. So if you are, if you like the law or want to know about the law and want to know about these UCC codes and what the scams are and who's involved and how it works, next week is going to be the show. We're going to get into all the legal stuff. So if you like that, that's what's going to be going on next week. Okay, Bibi Bacchus is her name. That's B-I-B-I-B-A-C-C-H-U-S. So that's going to be quite interesting. Right, a quick announcement. Gillian, who is representing the Irish Society of Homeopaths and Homeopathy Awareness, she says, we are hosting Just One Drop Film again, a virtual screening on Friday the 30th of April 2021 at 7:30, followed by a Q&A with the filmmaker Laurel Cheaton. And the website is https://gathr.us/screening, which is screening/31779. If you want that link, email me and I'll send you the link. She's offering 100 free tickets to anyone interested to know more about homeopathy. Her phone number is 087-220-7366. That's 087-220-7366. Or you can email Gillian on ishwhaw@gmail.com. Okay, ishwhaw@gmail.com. And that is a film, the One Drop Film regarding homeopaths and homeopathy. If you want to go and see that, there's 100 free tickets. Give Gillian a ring. If you want any information on this or you miss it, send me an email to contact us at circleofwhitelight.com and I'll send you the information. And as I said at the start of the show, next Saturday I'm being interviewed by Patricia Corey and her show. Patricia has been on OAM Circle of White Light and we are swapping roles. She is interviewing me. Her show is called Beyond the Matrix at 2 p.m. It's a pre-record, but she will actually get it up there. Thanks to everybody that jumped on the chat room, chatted to each other. Thanks to you. Thank you very much for the questions. As usual, I'm humbled. Thank you for all your support. Thank you for your donations. The school loved all the musical instruments. They're having great fun with them. Thank you very much. Have a great week. And 2 days time, I'll be doing an interview again because time is flying by. As you know, I said it there last week. Thank you again, everybody. And I hope you're all well. I hope the information was good. Do your own check and do your own research. And yeah, I'm sure in a few months time, we'll get Graham on again, have another chat. So take care for myself, Alan James. Have a good week and we'll catch you next week. Bye bye.
You have been listening to Circle of White Light Radio on CircleofWhiteLight.com, focusing on solutions and thinking different.